Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Bankrupt orchestras, aging audiences, declining attendance, skyrocketing conservatory tuition. Classical music in America is in peril. So who's to blame? The record industry, the internet, pop musicians? Will Roselip has a different idea. He wants to take down classical music's traditional culture. In his book, The Libertine's Guide to the Classical Music Revolution, he outlines why the industry is in crisis and some ideas on how to save it. Will Roselip is a cellist, a media director for the Cambridge Philharmonic, and author of the Classical Dark Arts blog. And Will, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks, Virginia. Good to be here.
So who did you write this book for? Is it for musicians?
The reason I wrote the book in the first place is because I'd seen, you know, a billion Slate articles about the death of classical music, and I was just getting a little tired of that. I mean, every few months we sort of revisit the topic, and from where I stand, it's very much alive. It's just sort of in a little, we'll call it a recession or a little dip in interest. And it seemed like we need a fresh reboot, just a new pair of eyes to look at things, and I'm not saying that I'm that pair of eyes. But it's sort of common sense that we need to not necessarily reboot it, but we do need to represent it to people and present it in a way that makes sense. Like a line I use in the book and that I've repeated ad infinitum after that is that classical music doesn't have a seat at the pop culture table. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem because we forget that like people have very short attention spans. And it's really hard to market classical music in that small amount of time. But I think we have to figure out a way not to dumb it down, but just to break off a little piece for people so they can figure out how they get into it.
Well, classical music always has had a reputation for being stuffy or inaccessible, not really having a seat at the pop music table. Is part of the problem the culture of performances themselves, which I think for a lot of people feels prohibitive?
I think so. I think it's a little stuffy. It's been a little too formal for a long time. I was at a concert recently. And I won't say the orchestra, but it was a big orchestra. And as the performer was coming out on stage, I pulled out my phone to take a little video of it. And I felt like I felt like I was a pariah or something for just taking 30 seconds of video to show people what it was like mm-hmm. when this particular performer came out on stage. I'm like, oh. So that's something we really need to work on. I think that making it more comfortable for audiences, everything from like not dressing, we look like penguins up on stage. We've got all the tuxedos and the formal wear, dressed for a funeral or something. I don't know who decided on this dress code, but I think we can just get rid of it. And also, you know, when you look out into the audiences, you have a certain level of dress or decorum or whatever, and people are just kind of scared. They're scared to make noise. You hear a few coughs in between movements, but other than that, you don't really get a lot from the audience except for the obligatory bravos at the end. It would be nice to change that. When Mozart performed some of his new pieces, he wrote a letter, I think, to one of his family members saying, you know, I premiered one of my works and the audience was so loud I had to go back and play it two or three or four more times because they were so into that. That's like the most foreign experience now, and it's kind of a shame. I mean, we really need to do something about it.
Well, so you're a millennial, you're a cellist. What's going to work then? What will make these orchestral performances and the music a little more accessible?
Well, I don't think it's any one thing necessarily. I can just say anecdotally, when I've performed for a bunch of different things. You know, I've played at weddings and funerals. I've done performances at sort of business organizations and that kind of stuff, on down through orchestral shows and in bars. And the thing that really resonates with people is that you can kind of approach the performers. If you do it in less stuffy settings, like you get into art galleries or you play outdoors or it's like street musicians, whatever, like people feel much more comfortable to just come up, take in the music and just, you know, decide how much they want to engage. The problem is, you know, oftentimes we get them into symphony halls and we just close and lock the doors and like, nope, you're not moving for an hour and a half. And if you do, then you've just broken protocol. You'll be banished for life. And one of the groups that I talk about a lot is Group Muse, which is this new thing in Boston. I think it's in New York now, too, where it stages shows in people's living rooms. And this is kind of a genius idea because everybody's just kind of sitting around. They're having snacks. They're drinking a beer. And in between pieces, the performer talks to the audience like a normal human being, not like some alien up on stage, describes the piece, why she likes playing this piece, etc. So it's a really interesting concept, and I think one that more orchestras and more performers would do well to emulate.
You also advocate for smaller orchestras, slimmed down school curricula, reasonable expectations for audience interest. But let's look at this, Will. I mean, symphony orchestras are definitely in trouble. In 2011, the Philadelphia Orchestra declared bankruptcy. There have been strikes and lockouts in Minnesota, Atlanta. It suggests that something is really wrong. So what do you do with these kind of big structural problems? You're talking about, you know, kind of rebuilding a whole ecosystem here.
Yeah, it's kind of daunting. I don't necessarily have the answer to this question, but I will say in the book that I was advocating for smaller groups, sort of a more of a startup mentality where you just do as bare bones as possible in order to generate interest, to generate a set of core fans, you know, the diehards who are going to come to every show. Mm-hmm. They retweet every tweet that your orchestra sends out. They like everything on Facebook. That kind of approach may help. I think when you're talking about bigger orchestras, it's a little bit more of a conundrum. I think that adventurousness in programming is one great area to start, not necessarily always programming in a way where, you know, you do your overture to start off with, then you do the concerto, then you take a nice little respite, a little intermission, then come back and you do the big symphony or whatever. Like, you know, there's some room to experiment in there. And I think people will really respect orchestras, not only that don't pander to the same kinds of things that have always worked, but who have their audience in mind and want to try something new. And I think they'll respond if they see that the orchestra is taking some risks. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, oh, wow, you know.
When you were talking, I was thinking smaller orchestras, smaller performance halls, kind of limits the repertoire. But is that the point, to get off of the kind of greatest hits bandwagon, I guess, you know, play new composers?
That would be nice, yeah. And you see a lot of new composers write for really unusual ensembles and a lot of smaller stuff. The full orchestra is always will be the sort of Dolby 5.1 surround sound experience. It is the 24-karat experience for classical music. There won't ever be a replacement for that. I mean, when we look at big occasions, you know, heads of state who pass away for the Olympics, whatever, you see tremendously large orchestras, and there's a reason for that because it's a lot of sound, and it's fascinating to watch players like that. But it's not the only way that you can present classical music. There are many other ways. And there's nothing stopping an orchestra, like here we have the Boston Symphony. There's nothing stopping the Boston Symphony from also doing breakout shows, from doing shows off campus, hopefully, you know, in communities of color, reaching out to people who don't normally go to classical shows. You don't have to have the full symphony on stage every night of the week.
But does the audience really want to hear new composers? I mean, looking at classical music sales and what's popular, it looks like a lot of retread.
There are some people who just like to go and hear the hits, and I totally get that. I love the hits. I love Beethoven above almost all other composers. But at the same time, I think they're willing to go along for the ride. You look at a composer like John Luther Adams. He has a new piece out called Become Ocean, which was recorded by the Seattle Symphony. And this, I mean, this is a really fascinating piece. You know, he probably wrote it last year or 2013 or something like that. And you can tell by reviews of the orchestra's playing, by reviews of the CD, that he's really taking some risks, but also, like, connecting with some of the core stuff, like the moments of big feeling that the audience wants to hear still. So that's, I mean, there's promise in moments and in composers and pieces like that. We have to be driving towards that. But yeah, it's a fine balance between the classics and some of the newer stuff.
Let's pause and hear a little bit of John Luther Adams' composition, Become Ocean. Well, it seems we've been hearing that classical music is dead for a long time. Will Roslip begs to differ. He says we have to find new ways to play, perform, and experience classical music. His new book is called The Libertine's Guide to the Classical Music Revolution. Classical music tastes are also shaped by what we hear on classical music radio. So what role do stations play in this, and what changes would you like to hear?
I would like to hear more stations, more classical DJs or whatever you want to call them, be like Funkmaster Flex. I said this in the book where he's sitting in.
Let's just clarify. He's on Hot 97. That's a New York station, hip hop station.
Yes. Yeah. Hip hop DJ. And he's been doing it for years and years. And the fascinating thing about him is that he's not just lining up a playlist. It's not like, you know, just turning on Spotify and walking away for 3 hours. He's toying with listeners. He's playing pieces for them. He's giving them little snippets. If he's got a premiere, like a new Beyonce track, he's not going to give you the whole thing. He's just going to give you like 15 seconds of the beat and stop. And he'll play the little record scratch thing, you know, and then stop everything dead in its tracks and be like, yeah, it's great. But if you want to hear the whole thing, you got to come back later. And just keep doing that and just tantalizes the audience and it's genius. I'd like to hear more of that. I know that some stations are heading more towards a movement by movement performance rather than playing complete works. I'm of two minds on that because it's nice to be able to to carve up things the way you want to carve them up. But on the other side, you do want to, you know, it is good to hear stuff in its entirety, the way the composer wrote it. But I think any composer would just be relieved that we're playing her, his music today, you know, maybe 100 or 200 years after the piece was written.
Okay, so we've covered the role of the audience, the performances, the compositions, the playing on radio stations and presentation. You also target the marketing of classical music. Now, if you had control over marketing classical music, what would you do?
Yeah, in terms of the marketing, I think that we would really want to look more at things like the way mixtapes are marketed to people. So mixtapes are basically uploaded by an artist online and then just sent out to any fans who want to consume that. Right now, there's sort of a gatekeeper approach with some of the record labels. Mm-hmm. And they start with the artist. They repack some favorites. They add some, you know, high art or artwork to the project and then just send it off for people to enjoy and digest and whatever. It's not so much the way that music is consumed anymore. It's an immediate thing. You know, it's a reactionary thing. When there's all the stuff that happened in Ferguson, you saw many artists responding by putting out songs about Ferguson.
Right.
And I think that classical music could be very much the same. It can be in the moment. It can talk to people in the same way that you would talk about any other kind of music, whether it's hip hop, electronica, metal, whatever, but without insulting anybody or just seeming kind of like a little out of the conversational loop.
Right. Well, the music industry has changed dramatically for everybody, especially those in the middle ground, not those on top of the food chain. I mean, Katy Perry and Taylor Swift and Pharrell are still doing just fine. But everyone's trying to figure out this new model. Can it be applied to classical music?
The Katy Perrys of the world, the Taylor Swifts, whoever, are always going to be playing the Super Bowl halftime show. There's no way around that because people like a show and you have to have somebody to slot in there. But on down the line from them, basically we've got smaller, more independent artists who may or may not have a label affiliation, who are doing their own sort of marketing. And this goes back to the core set of fans, the ones who really like your work, who are almost going to be doing some of your marketing for you. They feel passionate enough about this new release that they're just going to jump all over it. There's a rapper named Joey Bad who's out of New York City, and I know he has a release in a week or 2 weeks. And I'm tweeting this out to all my friends and messaging them, like, you have to hear this when it comes out. And that's the sort of model or approach that I think classical music has to go to as well. You know, you have people on a mailing list or whatever, and they say, and you just talk to them and say, we could really use some help with this. If you want to tell your friends about it, you know, here's all the information you're going to need to promote this. And it's not a guaranteed thing. Unfortunately, the days of making the most money off of album sales are probably over, but you can still do well on merch. You can still do well on ticket sales, on getting people to come out and support Kickstarter, things like that. So I think it's a combination of those things that are going to be the answer. There's not one silver bullet at this time.
Well, I feel like we've had a little bit of a pep talk, Will. Thank you.
I'm glad you feel that way. Thanks, Virginia. It was fun.
Will Roslip is a cellist. He's also media director for the Cambridge Philharmonic and a producer at WGBH Radio. There's a link to his new book, The Libertine's Guide to the Classical Music Revolution, at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. And we would love to hear from you. Is classical music dead? Do you listen to it? Do your kids listen to it? Do you shell out money to buy CDs or attend performances? You can join in the discussion on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouthradio. Up next, the long and storied history of music at sea. Did the Titanic's orchestra really play a hymn as the ship went down? We'll find out when Word of Mouth returns after a short break.